March Against Fear through Mississippi of June 1966. And it was SNCC that basically rescues the march. And all that groundwork that was done by SNCC, one of the point persons that was trying to, you know, where do we go from here with that, was the elder who I'm getting ready to introduce to him, and who brought that call to Black Power. And that became a watershed moment that sparked the genuine, it was a clear shift in the character of the organization and an expanded shift in that character of the movement. So with that, let me introduce Baba Mukasa Ricks, field secretary of the SNCC during that particular moment, and let him unpack that moment, the moments, whatever it is that you think we need to know about that moment, Baba Mukasa. The floor is yours, and I'm so glad and so proud that we're finally getting to do this, sir.
Thank you. First, I want to clear one thing, is that SNCC never was the students Dr. King. We started out as equals. When we met in Raleigh, Ella Baker told us that we didn't want, even though Martin Luther King paid for the meeting, Ella Baker told us we didn't want to be under them preachers, and we needed our own autonomy, and we formed our own organization. And then we had different styles of leadership, but we were always independent and a little more militant and even a little more ready than those forces that were Dr. King. Now, the other thing is that just 3 or 4 points, we've all been in Georgia, all been in movement, wherever SNCC goes, the student of our coordinating committee. And one other point, my name was Willie Ricks when I was in SNCC. And Mukasa Dada as a Pan-Africanist, and on. Wherever SNCC workers go, they had to form an organization and create local leadership. So we never saw ourselves as the leader. And Jim Foreman had a discussion with Martin one time talking about the style of leadership. Are we talking about one person being a leader? Are we talking about creating a whole host of leaders? And in our style of leadership, the preachers saw themselves as leaders. We saw ourselves as organizers. And to make it clear, Foreman probably was the strongest person through the whole civil rights movement. So we have all been a movement. That became a big movement. People jailed and bombed. And as we grew more demonstration and militant young people, we demonstrated, we were beat up, and some of us threw bricks, balls back, and those kinds of things. But it was a mixture, and we were trying to find ourselves. But we started out in a peaceful, loving, nonviolent way. But unfortunately, the people that we started out to meet and demonstrate against and whatever we were trying to do, it drew in a host of people that was violent, mean, hateful, bombing, shooting, and doing everything else. And of course, that changed our attitude too. Then, as we grew up, we put bombs in the church in Birmingham and killed, and we had a movement in Selma where they used terrorism against the people, and Tuskegee and other places. SNCC on any given day had 100 different places demonstrating and protesting. And that we went out, we did integration and mixing and going in the front door. They beat us back, and we kept fighting. Until we broke that little thing anyway, go in the front door, they gave us civil rights with no silver and no rights. And it's still like that today. And then we forced them to do the voters' rights bill. I'll make it short. We forced them to do the voters' rights bill. They threw dynamite at us, bombed us, killed us, lynched people, and did everything else. Now to go back, is that after we demonstrated and protested, we began to grow politically. So in 1965, Gwen Patton invited Malcolm X to come to Tuskegee Institute, and he spoke at Tuskegee. Nick people gave him transportation. And then we took him to Selma, and he made a speech in Selma. All of them came, Coretta, all of them went there. And he made a speech, talked about the house nigger and field nigger and that kind of thing. But Malcolm spoke and he had an impact. Now, Malcolm said that you can't understand what's going on in Selma unless you understand what's going on in the Congo. In the Congo, they went there, they've killed millions and millions and millions. They cut people's feet and heels off and everything else because they didn't do enough work that day. They've killed millions in the last 5 years. They've killed over 6 million people. The Congo is a rich place in Africa that have diamonds, gold, oil, rubber, zinc, tea, copper, pearl, cobalt, manganese. Everything is in Africa. So if you're using a cell phone right now, you're using the Congo. Everything it takes to make a car would come from Africa. All these factories, they run on Africa. But there are forces that came in, their white folks, and the imperialists, they call them, they came into Africa, they killed the Africans, took over the country, tore down the Great Kingdom, stole everything out of Africa, including us. And then the Africans are hungry, starving, but yet they come from the richest land in the world. The white people, the Europeans, are rich because of what they steal and take out the Congo. So if they do to people like that in the Congo, you can see what they're doing to you right here in Selma. And we have to mix those things together. So once we began to preach, Malcolm came to Selma, and then he also sent forces into Birmingham. And when he sent them into Birmingham, he was demonstrating on how to fight police and how to fight them dogs when they were sent on those kind of demonstrations. He was definitely angry over nonviolence and allowing them people to beat us and whatever. But he said we had to fight back. And then shortly after then, they blew up a church, killed people in Birmingham. Now, Malcolm was not strong when he was living. Malcolm became strong and dominant and it got their attention when he would die. Because after they killed him, they had painted his name so bad that everybody was scared to even call his name. You go to church and stand up and say, Malcolm, they said, oh, don't mention that name in here. And that kind of thing. That's the kind of propaganda that was out against Malcolm. But an underground of people, Fred Measley was the first one that gave me a roll of tapes. They got Malcolm X tapes and they started making copies and copies and copies and copies and having little freedom schools in your house. People where they're sitting there smoking herb, listening to Coltrane. They throw Malcolm in. And Malcolm became educated from the grassroots, put his name out there, and made him more popular than any other leaders. And Malcolm's leadership and confidence after death came from the grassroots people. We put Malcolm X tapes everywhere. And Malcolm began to speak to us. Now, Malcolm began to speak to us after death. Malcolm spoke to us about Lumumba in the Congo. Malcolm spoke to us about Africa and neo-colonialism, Uncle Tom's, and that kind of thing. So Malcolm took our movement through philosophy and shipped us toward Africa. And when we looked toward Africa, we saw Angola, who was fighting a war with guns, shooting down missiles and airplanes, just like they're doing today in Iraq and whatever. In Angola, Mozambique, we saw slavery in South Africa. That might have been one of the things that influenced SNCC to take a delegation up to the United Nations, me, Foreman, and Cleve Sellers, and Winky Hall, and we went into the United Nations, kicked the door down, and went in the South African embassy and told them to free Mandela and free Robert Sobukwe. But Malcolm's philosophy grew when Malcolm brought us toward Africa. Malcolm talked to Nkrumah. We later went to Nkrumah and we took the philosophy of Nkrumahism and we talked about freeing Africa, liberating Africa, having our own land, having our own country. Malcolm's spokesman was the follower of Marcus Garvey. We now look at Marcus Garvey, accept the red, black, and green flag and talked about Garveyism and all that. But through black power, we forced all these schools to get black studies programs, teach our people about black, put some black books in these schools, get rid of them white pictures, even Jesus and all, whatever. But we had to teach people that black was beautiful, teach people that they had beautiful hair, nose, lip, because they had done a job on us to make us hate ourselves. And they still doing it. And that we had to do all that. So the teaching of Malcolm made us black and made us more conscious, talk about black is beautiful. Made us more revolutionary too. That's why we grabbed on to Angola, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, even South Africa, and we helped them with liberation movement money or getting anything that they need to carry a revolution against that was going on in Guinea-Bissau and South Africa, Angola, Mozambique. We gave them material support. And then we began to, with black power, all the countries in Africa, the liberation folk, so they wanted some black power. So that linked our movement up with them. And then they told us, made it clear that you're not black, you're African, you belong to Africa. In order for you to have real black power, you gotta have Africa. You need a land, you need a country, you need a nation. And these are the things that Malcolm led us to point out. He pointed us to Pan-Africanism, and Pan-Africanism began to unfold a lot of information that you go on daily. So when we first started talking about black power, we just talking about what these white folk doing and what we could see. But as black power began to grow in Detroit and all around, burning down cities and all this kind of stuff, crowd of black power, shooting down hundreds of black men in the streets because they was into the women and children, because they were saying black power. All that come from Malcolm making it clear what this country is, what it would do, how they got a knife in you, and they can talk about reparation, they sorry, Black Lives Matter, but they're pushing the knife deeper and deeper and deeper. Imperialism is raping Africa more. They're raping Angola. They're fighting a war in Chad and other countries in Africa right now. And they're dropping bombs, drop on our people, running them into the ocean, chopping them up in the streets, them Arabs, chopping them up in the streets in Libya, taking the richest country in Africa, standing today, and making the poorest country in the world of it, and giving all the wealth and information to the thieves. So Africa is the yoke of imperialism all over the world. Look what they're doing in Cuba, trying to starve them to death, keeping food and medicine. They just made it where you can't send a Western Union there, and made it difficult to get a Western Union out. So they're doing everything against the people, like in Venezuela, Nicaragua. And you can look all over the world, the United States got its hands in everything in the world, and they use Uncle Tom's to do it. They got men like Malcolm talked about, a man named Shumbe, the worst African ever born, the murderer of Lumumba. Then we got many Shumbes now, all over armies, got armies all over Africa, Nigeria shooting their own children down the streets. And Africans holding guns on their own people at the order of these dumbass presidents, and they're holding guns, Africare, holding guns on the people where France, Britain, Germany, United States come and steal their resources. And the only way to stop this is revolution. So Malcolm started using the word revolution. Malcolm taught it to us. Malcolm was come to know him by our people and pushed in the world by the grassroots. And that's why Malcolm philosophically was always clear the king, but grow stronger and stronger and become a world leader. So all y'all nationalist group and Pan-Africanist group, we need to come together and put our forces together and prepare to fight. You can't fight individually, so that, don't even try that. So we need organization. We need to put together our schools under every tree and begin to teach people the things they need to know and the things that will lead them toward where we going as a people. But black power.